This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling.
16 years from today, Greg Gerstner will finally land the perfect cannonball. Epic splash. Unsuspecting friends. A work of art only possible because Greg is already meeting all these same people at AARP volunteer and community events that keep him active and involved and help make sure his happiness lives as long as he does. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/local.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Visit progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary, not available in all states or situations.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show coming your way. It's going to be a big hour. Go inside politics with Josh Crash Hour, Fox News Radio political analyst. So much going on domestically. Also digitally, I think the First Lady's having her AI conference town hall today. And at 6 o'clock, all the titans of industry of the digital age. I'm talking about Bill Gates. I'm talking about Zuckerberg. You have the Pinchar of Google. I also think they have the CEO of Oracle. Not Elon Musk. He'll be meeting first of 10 meetings they're going to have. The president wants to stay on top of what's happening digitally, make sure we can remain the best in the world. And we have Chad Bronstein here and Izzy Martinez. Both them put together historic first ever Real American Freestyle Wrestling. It's being aired on Fox Nation exclusively. And we'll look at the next event and what the first one was like. Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
TACO, Trump always chickens out. You know, I hate to be so blunt, but somebody's got to say the truth. And there are a lot of people like Brandon Johnson, like Pritzker, who are standing up and saying the truth. And what you are seeing is this. Ready for the chicken invitation?
Larry Krasner is such an embarrassment to Philadelphia. He let crime run wild there and thinks it's a positive that Chicago is pushing back on their crime crackdown from the White House. It looks like the administration might be delaying a Chicago move because of the courts. It might be going to New Orleans. Is that the right move in your mind?
Number two.
Now, what the Surgeon General pointed out today is there are actually some mandates in Florida regulatory that never even made it into statute through his agency long before I was governor, long before he was Surgeon General. So he has the ability to peel those back.
Well, this is getting exciting now. Ron DeSantis and the MAHA movement. He has decided to go all in and say it's up to parents what vaccines and if their kids are going to be vaccinated before and after school. Today, RFK gets grilled, and he's ready for it, reportedly, by both sides over his decision on personnel, CDC, and vaccines. Well, break out the popcorn.
Number one.
Well, I'm having a conversation with him very shortly, and I'll know pretty much what we're going to be doing. We've taken very strong action, as you know, and in other ways we've taken very strong action. But I'll be speaking to him over the next few days, and we're going to see.
And that is the President of the United States talking about Vladimir Putin. Your move, Mr. President. Vladimir is playing with peace, the peace process, and one man trying to give him an off-ramp is Donald Trump, and he is not taking it. That conflict has destroyed his economy, cost him millions of men. Today's call with Ukrainian President Zelensky, I think, is more than a update call. I think it's going to be the Trump game plan, and that's what I hope anyway. Because Vladimir Putin appears with President Xi, makes a mockery of World War II aftermath, as he says, really, U.S. had really no role in defeating Japan. Does anybody on the planet understand how stupid a statement that is? President's insulted by it. I'd be insulted, too. And then he goes and has that 12,000-soldier military display, big-time parade in front of 25 world leaders. The president knows exactly why he was doing it. Cut 24.
You gave Vladimir Putin a two-week deadline to agree to talks with Volodymyr Zelensky. That deadline is now nearly approached. Can you give us any indication of when you will make it?
Well, I'm having a conversation with him very shortly, and I'll know pretty much what we're going to be doing. We've taken very strong action, as you know, and in other ways we've taken very strong action. But I'll be speaking to him over the next few days, and we're going to see.
With who, sir?
I'm going to know exactly what's happening.
Yeah, and the peace prize, this is my prediction. They've said, Zelensky, come meet me in Moscow. That should never do that. Should not be there. And then they should just side on Budapest. They also thought about Rome. That's where they met in the past. And if Vladimir Putin thought that there was no chance of him getting any more land and started taking too much incoming, then he would do a deal. But now he feels as though getting all of Ukraine is a possibility. And with China's backing, North Korea actually putting soldiers in, why would he not feel that way? But the president knows exactly what that whole parade was about. He gets it. Cut 28.
I put out a truth last night. You saw that. And I was the one that brought it up. I said, they're only doing this. They're really there looking to when they did what they did. I thought it was a beautiful ceremony. I thought it was very, very impressive. But I understood the reason they were doing it. And they were hoping I was watching. And I was watching. My relationship with all of them is very good. We're going to find out how good it is over the next week or two. I think that we helped China very much, as you know.
50,000 attended, 10,000 soldiers took part, 80 years since World War II ended. This would have been an opportunity to bring up the great things that America has done. You would have thought, that's kind of interesting. They keep the West out, but they mention America's role in defeating Japan that was just destroying China. Meanwhile, they put out a statement. And one thing President Xi has said himself, mankind is faced with a choice, peace or war, dialogue or confrontation. It could be a win-win or a zero-sum game, while they roll out their military hardware, which many say has led to many experts to believe this is the largest, fastest, most comprehensive military buildup since World War II. They have a large laser system. They got this this missile that breaks up into multiple warheads. They call it a Guam killer. That's us. We have a huge base right in the area. Submarine 65 feet long. And, of course, they got these drones and robot dogs and robot wolves. We'll see. Our economy is still bigger. If you combine it with our allies, still greater. We just have to say, okay, I hear what you're doing. My regional allies feel threatened. So I think it's time for Japan to build up and get an offensive threat. You don't like that? Really? How about South Korea? Let's get more of a THAAD missile system into there and maybe more offensive firepower. Same thing with the Philippines. And let's make Taiwan the invasion porcupine we always knew it could be. So that's some of the things the president can easily do boistering talk, without threatening anybody. Just take action, and that will be enough. The other thing that RFK has come out today, and he's going to get it from both sides when he comes out and says, I'm not sure we should be taking all these vaccines. In fact, I want all the parents to decide what they want to do on vaccines. How do you feel about that? I mean, do you think that we're at risk? I'm not a medical professional. Probably people, you're not a medical professional, more than likely. Do you feel as though we've eradicated measles, mumps, and other things because hepatitis B, because we were able to get these vaccines to people? Do you think we're getting too many too often? I mean, I'm all for limiting the COVID vaccine to if you want it and if you are of underlying conditions. But where do you think about what RFK has brought up and what he has said? And what do you think is going to come out of this meeting and what Governor Ron DeSantis did yesterday? He came out and said, look, I'm the first state to do this. I've seen enough from the MAHA movement to believe I'm all in. Cut 32.
We believe in informed consent and we believe in parental rights. Those have been core principles that we've operated on both during COVID and after COVID. Now, what the Surgeon General pointed out today is there are actually some mandates in Florida regulatory that never even made it into statute through his agency long before I was governor, long before he was Surgeon General. So he has the ability to peel those back. He also has the ability, which he's doing, to expand the religious objection to include moral and ethical concerns about it. And so we feel that's empowering people to make the right decisions for themselves and for their families.
Remember, this is all Hollywood saying, if you don't get the vaccine, they despise you. They hate you. Remember, don't go to school if you're not vaccinated. Remember, you're fired from the Army and Navy and military, from all military jobs if you're not vaccinated. No religious exemptions to this is where we're at. The distrust with the CDC is pervasive, and they have themselves to blame because of the way they handled the pandemic and the thuggish way in which they handled themselves. So we'll talk about that. But I want you to weigh in, too. Do you mind that maybe other kids in your kid's school is not vaccinated? And are you going to be one of those parents to tell your kids they're not going to get vaccinated? I want your opinion on that. 1-866-408-7669. It's going to be an explosive hearing today. So when we come back, Jod Bronstein and Izzy Martinez will be joining us, co-founders of Real American Freestyle. A historic event took place over the weekend. Another one is on tap. We'll discuss it all exclusively on Fox Nation next on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade. It's Will Tane Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday at FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Well, welcome back, everybody. With me in studio now is Jod Bronstein and Eric Bischoff. Eric's chief media officer, and Chad is the co-founder and president of the Real American Freestyle. And if you heard a lot about it, it's because it was aired on Fox Nation Live on Saturday. It's now available to download. That's what I did. I could not do Saturday. I was working. But I was able to watch over the last 2 days, and it's a great event. I always love the first one, too. And you saw some great wrestling, and you really saw what it could become. First off, guys, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
What was it like to get it the first one done, Chad?
I thought it was incredible. You know, when we were first on Fox and Friends with Hulk, Eric and Izzy, and it was just, you know, becoming something. I mean, to see the full production, I think everyone was shocked on how good the production quality was. And the wrestlers, the key was making sure the wrestlers felt like they were on the big stage, and the wrestlers were in awe. And so I felt it was a huge success, and the wrestling community has been super positive. We haven't had any negative feedback, and everyone's like, when's RAFO2?
Eric, I love the tribute to Hulk in the beginning, and of course his son is going to play a role from here on in, right?
Absolutely.
So Real American beer goes with the Real American wrestling.
It's like milk and cookies.
I know.
How can you not do that?
I was able to subtly see the beer ad. It's amazing how perceptive I was. But I just loved it was in Cleveland. You saw some great matches. You saw some great champions. And going to look to bring it from here. I want people to listen to some of this. This is Real Woods as he becomes a featherweight champion, defeating Darian Caldwell. Cut 40.
Real Woods can separate himself because this is what he does. Caldwell, this is what he scored with in that first exchange, if you recall. He's looking to flip that back. It's a big risk.
Yeah, he risked something.
Oh!
That was a risk that he took right there. Real Woods gets the pin.
Ladies and gentlemen. And there you go. And it felt a little UFC, a little WWE, right? I mean, it felt
that was
like
the goal.
Yeah. So your thoughts about wrestling and what it was like with 5,000 people there, because we're used to USA Wrestling. We've seen world championships, but this was different.
The audience, it was electrifying. Like, you know, there's all these youth community. There's a big youth community that came out, right? All the clubs in Ohio. I'm from Cleveland. When we were down there for the beer tour, Hulk's like, brother, this is the city. And it felt that way, that energy when Hulk went through the Cavs game and everyone was giving him a standing ovation. When we did this, it shocked the community. The community felt supported. And you, Brian, you know the wrestling world. It's like, it's a small world. So you have to show them that you put the time and effort into it. But the audience was huge. We were plus 4,000 people. I know there's other wrestling promotions that we outperformed at the Wolstein Center. But the audience was electrifying, and the kids had the blast.
That's one of the things that we were talking about right before we came up here, is if you look at the audience composition, it's like combat sports meets family friendly. There were a lot of kids there, and fortunately our wrestlers are just, they're great people. They interacted with a lot of the kids. They signed autographs. It just made it fun for the whole family.
Right. You have champions against champions. You heard about, like, you know, he's a Big Ten champion, but this guy's a world champion. And then you have an Olympic champion and going against different generations too. I saw it when I was there for the first launch of professional lacrosse. You have some legends coming out at 23, and then you had the Gates, who were in their 30s at the time. Right. They never played against each other.
Yep.
So then you're taking champions that you saw, wrestle somebody that's 7 years younger. What was that like, the clash of generations?
It was incredible. I mean, I know Lance and Darian. They're incredible competitors. I think it takes a lot of guts to go out there at not wrestling for 12 years. And the younger generation's been training every single day, and they're world champs. People wanted to see those matches, just like you said about lacrosse. Like, people were excited about Darian versus Real Woods because they thought Darian was an incredible wrestler, NCAA champion, two-time Bellator champion. So then no one knew what was going to happen. And Darian put up a really good match with Real up until he got pinned. It was neck and neck. So he was, you know, if he keeps training, which he's going to, he's going to be a fan favorite coming into these cards. And same with Lance. Lance, we call Lance 7 weeks ago. He hasn't wrestled in 12 years, two-time PFL champ. He got teched by Austin, but again, most people...
What does tech mean?
It means that he got beat by points, so they stopped the match. And
there's too much of a gap.
Too much.
Because I did not know. I watched, and it would stop at 58 seconds. And I go, why?
He was up 14 points.
Well, yeah.
And freestyle is different than folk style. Freestyle can happen real fast, even faster than folk style, because the rolls are high points. So when he did the roll throughs, he got, you know, he gets big points for that. So Lance got caught with that. But Lance is a great competitor, four-time All-American. He just started training again. So if he keeps training, you'll see a different competitor out there.
Eric, it's kind of dangerous for boxers to go like fight. You know, they call Joe Louis the bum of the month club. He fought every month. They think that's crazy. But wrestlers, you can fight. You can wrestle frequently. So might we see some of these champions defending their title on the next event?
Absolutely. We're negotiating and setting those matches up right now.
When is it?
It's November 8th.
November 8th.
Yeah.
Where will it be?
I can't say today, but it will be at a place where wrestling is very appreciated. It's one of the best wrestling colleges in the United States.
All right, but you know it. You just don't want to share it with me.
Yeah.
It's a big announcement. It's a big surprise. We love surprises.
It will be shared on Fox.
The other thing that was interesting, you did have someone from India wrestle,
yes,
right?
Yes, Bajran, who's a congressman.
Yeah, so this is a world league, correct? How important is to get the world involved?
It's super important. So, you know, we when we did the deal with Fox, right, Brian, we saw you, 4 months ago. You actually helped, you know, and made the introduction for
with
us.
Gavin Haddon, yeah, so, Fox Nation,
so I have
and
to
Lauren Pedersen.
I have to give Brian Kilmeade credit here because he's a good friend to all of us. And, you know, with Hulk and stuff, we did the tour for the campaign. And Brian loved the idea and introduced me to Gavin. And that's how we got the deal done with Fox Nation, which, I mean, the Fox audience was amazing for this. When we did that Fox and Friends show, Hulk looked at me and goes, brother, this is it. Right? Because it dropped and every single person saw it. And that's when it became a reality. But in terms of international, we weren't able to do any streaming deals because we were moving so fast and there's so much to get done. But yeah, we had a lot of the Russian community, a lot of the Egyptian community, all these different communities saying, where can we watch it? And now after the day after we made such an impact, you'll see the top Russian wrestlers.
And Eric, you love this because Iran, also some of America's natural geopolitical enemies,
absolutely,
are great wrestlers. The
storyline writes itself.
Yeah, you don't need the Iron Sheik.
No, that's it. But you know what's interesting, Chad? I don't even know if I've told you this, but yesterday I got a call from a friend of mine in India. I've got three sports writers from India that want to do interviews about Real American Freestyle.
See, we all know the dedication and discipline you need to be a successful wrestler, but sadly, it doesn't mean money. Got to go get a job on the side, right? It's like a pole vaulter, you know? So, but they finally have their shot. This is what I'm excited for the guys and the women. They'll finally have the shot to get paid, right? You guys are paying these guys.
Of course, yeah, we're paying them. And, you know, we spend a lot of time with coaching them on, you know, just showing their personalities,
yeah,
because prior
they want to see that.
You got to see it. And you saw it. I was shocked. Like some of them just really, you know, they just turned up really great. And I think what you said about the women, Brian, it was nail biting to have like Sarah Wrestling and Holly Holm, who was a surprise. Holly Holm almost pinned her opponent.
Well,
and in her very first freestyle match, she'd never wrestled a freestyle match before.
And you get these bios before. UFC did a great job with this too. So, you guys, UFC, WWE, all goes into Real American Wrestling. So thanks so much, guys. And where do we get tickets next time?
Ticketmaster.
Go to Ticketmaster. Yeah. It's going to be announcements coming shortly.
Yes.
Another event in November. You got to be there. Congratulations.
Thank you, Brian.
This is Jimmy Fallon, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
All right, we're back. With me right now, we're going to talk a little politics. It's always great to just take a break and talk about wrestling. I love emerging leagues that have great athletes but no publicity. I'll give you an example. Women's soccer, when I first started at Fox, nobody cared. I was there 101,000 at the Rose Bowl when they became national champions, and famously Brandi Chastain took her top off, and everyone remembers that dramatic win. I think it was over China, and now they have their own league, and they were great, and they're the best in the world. Same thing with lacrosse, best in the world, but nowhere to go after college unless you want to play for a USA team. And then they launched the Professional Outdoor League with Jake Steinfeld. I was able to actually call some of those games in the sideline. And then wrestling, the same thing. Best athletes, were among the best in the world, but nowhere to go after if you don't make the national team. Or if you don't, I think Germany might add a league. So to see them doing in America and on Fox Nation is just great. Meanwhile, the thing that we've been following is what's happening in politics, and nobody better to talk to than Josh Krasauer. He joins us now, Fox News radio political analyst, as well as the Jewish Insider. Hey, Josh, welcome back.
Hey, Brian. Thanks. Good to be back with you.
All right. First off, something I don't really talk about, and I kind of agree with the president on this, and I know I'm in the minority, that you would think that the Democrats had this one driving passion to get to the bottom of the Epstein ugly affair, who this guy was and who he abused. They are suddenly interested because Donald Trump has pictures with Jeffrey Epstein. Ro Khanna wants to use this to propel himself as president of the United States. Where's this story going? Because 2 months ago, they said this is the one story Trump can't shake. It's not going away. But is this something the American people still have a passion about?
Yeah, it's not going away, but I agree with you, Brian, that the degree of attention to this story is far disproportionate to the ranking of this as a top issue among the American public. I think it's notable that among all the town halls and among all the events that were held during the long August recess, you didn't see, you know, a groundswell of people showing up at town halls demanding answers on the issue of Jeffrey Epstein, Republican, Democratic alike. Like this is a issue that Democrats feel like they could have some partisan advantage of. They feel like rightly it makes Trump seem like puts Trump in a bad light, and they think they can score some political points on this front. And they've gotten help by a few notable Republicans, Thomas Massie, who is sort of a libertarian, kind of heterodox Republican who's a thorn in the side of the administration on a number of issues. Marjorie Taylor Greene, also on this issue, has been front and center. But that's it. That's pretty much it. And you look at the polls, Trump's support among Republicans, among MAGA Republicans, is 95%+, right? I mean, so there hasn't been, despite all the attention that's received in the summer, any sign that Trump has lost any support right among the base. And we all know that whenever there's an issue, I mean, you talk till the cows come home about issues that could divide the Republicans or could be tricky for Donald Trump to deal with. In the end, Trump, when the partisanship kind of plays itself out. And I think that's what's happening here. I said yesterday on Special Report, I actually think it's more likely that Thomas Massie ends up getting a serious primary challenge in Kentucky because he's basically being a needle, really, really taking off Trump. But Trump is now trying to recruit a candidate against him. I think it's more likely Thomas Massie loses in a primary than you actually see the House vote to pass this discharge and releasing every single document on the Epstein files.
Right.
That's the political reality. Right.
Josh, the whole thing is it's because Trump doesn't – they're at a rivalry. Same thing. He's like the Adam Kissinger of this, even though one's more libertarian than the other. He doesn't care about Jeffrey Epstein and the victims. Well, maybe he cares personally. Now all of a sudden it's his mission to co-sponsor this legislation with Ro Khanna. Here's cut 35 is Massie.
This is what the Oversight Committee has got from the DOJ. This is the flight log. What's clear is they're not redacting just to protect victims. They are redacting to protect reputations of people.
Right. And Thomas Massie just wants to fly against the administration. Evidently, behind closed doors, him and Speaker Johnson really went at it, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, Speaker Johnson has said this has to go through the Oversight Committee. There's a legislative process to dealing with this. And some Democrats obviously accused that of being stonewalling the investigation. But look, there are legal reasons. You can't just release documents without – I mean, it's not just reputations. You can't smear someone for unfounded out, you know, with you know, testimony and stuff that's not meant for public eyes and just put it all out there. That's not how things are done. We don't want that done in a liberal democracy where anyone can just, you know, be libeled just by releasing – unredacted public documents. That's why the victims, right. You know, that was a very emotional and really worth watching display from the victim, sure. Epstein victims yesterday. But even they said, like, we're not saying our whole story because we know, like, there's a process by which this has to go through. So, you know, even someone like Massey, who, you know, look, you can have a different side of the argument, but the notion of releasing everything without doing the due diligence and making sure the appropriate names and you know, things that are not meant for public display to be redacted, I think is important. That's the legal process.
All right, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, I think the big test politically is, you know, how much oxygen does this end up having? What gives the story legs is if there's new information that comes out. We do know the Epstein story. We do know the issues that Democrats and Massey and Marjorie Taylor Greene are raising. But ultimately, for this story to continue to have oxygen, there's going to have to be new developments, new details, and we'll see where that goes.
Absolutely. So we'll see where that goes. And I think that Dan Bongino, who I would trust with every cell in my body, the guy just tells the truth. He comes on our show, told me on and off camera, he goes, nothing there. Guy killed himself. He goes, I looked at everything. We're just going to get it out. And so whatever, if people think there's not enough transparency, I'll tell you, Kash Patel and Dan Bongino, their reputation was transparency, but let's leave that behind. I want to talk about something that really matters, and that's crime in America. We know what happened with D.C. We know the results are undeniable. So the president wants to bring it to Chicago, and now J.B. Pritzker wants to run for president and stand up to the president on this. And it looks as though, since he's going to be so problematic, and because of that court case in California that said the president was, it's unconstitutional for him to have put the National Guard and Marines into Los Angeles, he's hesitant to go into a hostile city, not with the criminals, but with the mayor. So now he is looking to possibly go into a Republican-run state like Louisiana. So Larry Krasner, who should be embarrassed to show his face in public, in my view, the Philadelphia DA, who knows nothing except to be easy on crime, hopped on CNN, and this is what he's saying about this. Even though Chicago remains the murder capital of the country, with crime raging. Cut eight.
Well, Caitlin, I do a really good imitation of a chicken. If you'd like to hear it, I can do it, but I'll say it again. TACO, Trump always chickens out. What you're hearing is J.D. Vance chicken out for him because the governor stood up, because the mayor stood up, because most importantly, the residents of the city of Chicago know that they are in good hands and they're moving in the right direction, and they should stand up to a compulsive liar, to a 34-time convicted felon, to a man who loves crime. He doesn't hate it. He loves it because it serves his purpose of trying to overthrow the government of the United States. You know, I hate to be so blunt, but somebody's got to say the truth. And there are a lot of people like Brandon Johnson, like Pritzker, who are standing up and saying the truth. And what you are seeing is this. You ready for the chicken invitation? What, what?
I mean, you would think this guy is so embarrassed about the state of Philadelphia that he wouldn't go out there and brag that Chicago won by not getting help with their crime situation.
Yeah, look, it's interesting because Larry Krasner is actually one of the last remaining like big city DAs that's on the left. A lot of Democrats have ousted in San Francisco and L.A. They've ousted those types of prosecutors of DAs because they are so out of touch with the average or even urban voter, even Democratic city voter. And I think that display, like him imitating a chicken on national TV, that shows the level of seriousness that Democrats have on the crime issue. And look, I think in a weird way, like Trump comes out of this ahead politically because, look, there is, you know, reticence about sending the military, even the National Guard, into the country. At the same time, real concern about crime, especially in Chicago, which has one of the highest crime, highest murder rates, highest crime rates in the country, that is very real. Chicago has had a huge, huge crime problem on their hands for some time. And the fact that Trump raised the salience of that issue and got Governor Pritzker, Mayor Brandon Johnson, who, by the way, has a single-digit job approval rating, which is really hard to do anywhere, but he's managed to accomplish it. He put them front and center, literally, and I know Johnson, we talked about this before, Brian. Johnson went on Morning Joe on MSNBC, and even the liberal hosts were, like, mocking him because he claimed he did not even want policemen, more policemen in his city to help reduce crime. So in a weird, and in the way this has worked out on a political scale, because Trump has sort of exposed the lack of seriousness that these Chicago and Illinois officials, the Democrats, have on crime. And yet he's not actually – it looks like he's not going to actually send in the National Guard because he's actually respecting the legal decisions and the constitutional issues at play. So in a weird way,
though,
like, crime is now a major issue, and Democrats have exposed themselves on the left flank. That's not popular with the American
I know, but I'm disappointed because they're not areas where the mayor's mansion is or the governor's – the state capitol, they're fine. But in those areas, they continue to have shootings. Well, the shootings are down. Well, there's still 174 shootings this summer. I mean, come on. What you're seeing over the weekend, every time there's going to be this violence, you're going to see a spike. And the people would only benefit from an additional presence. I think if they reverse that decision from Judge Breyer in San Francisco that says the president can put National Guard in, I think he does it. But right now, there's a risk of him being embarrassed by them being forced to leave.
Well, you know, Brian, it's really interesting, and this is where there's a wedge within the Democratic Party. Mayor Bowser in D.C. is actually saying, my goodness, like the actual additional presence, law enforcement presence in the nation's capital has dramatically reduced violent crime, murders, carjackings. And they have now – well, the mayor, who's a Democrat in good standing, has actually welcomed a continued presence in the nation's capital. So there is a divide in the Democratic Party between sort of the – and it's interesting that the mayor is speaking out. But there are people who are more quiet about it that want the party to be more serious on crime. But then you have these very left-wing leaders in Chicago, in Los Angeles, in a lot of these other big cities where there is a resistance not just to – the specific issues at play, but to actually like putting more police on the streets, to actually having tougher penalties for criminals. Those are the issues at play that they've resisted, and they've been exposed, I think, for what they actually stand for.
So she had an executive order as Mayor Muriel Bowser. She's all over the place. She's trying to be a Democrat at the same time she understands success. She kind of walked this back yesterday, cut four.
Let me tell you without equivocation that the mayor's order does not extend the Trump emergency. In fact, it does the exact opposite. What it does is lays out a framework for how we will exit the emergency. The emergency ends on September 10th. The only way it can be extended legally is by the Congress. So I want the message to be clear to the Congress. We have a framework to request or use federal resources in our city. We don't need a presidential emergency.
So she wants to be able to use more resources to use our own people to do this. So that's the difference between the original announcement, she says.
Yeah, look, she's always been at odds with a very left-wing city council about having more resources, having tougher penalties for crimes. She's been very nuanced on the actual Trump executive orders and military presence in the city. But I think, like, if Democrats are talking about we need more police, we need more law enforcement, we need tougher penalties on criminals, on crime and violent crime, that would go a long way to helping them politically.
I think so too. We're seeing
the opposite from a lot of these major city leaders is showing how out of step so many of them are.
I just think that the other thing that Trump needs to do is say, here's my plan. This is how we get control of crime, but I'm going to leave something behind in 30 days. And that is a massive recruiting effort or possibly extending different, providing federal resources, FBI investigators, whatever, behind. So it's almost a program that comes in. My 30 days to get you sober and then the extended program to keep you sober.
Well, one thing that actually is a big breaking development in the nation's capital is that House congressional Republicans are actually now working in tandem with the White House on legislation that would actually give the federal government more control over some of the the laws in Washington, including ones that would allow and sort of people getting out on bail, including one that would make it easy for judges to just let juveniles out without any real penalties for committing violent crimes.
Yeah.
That actually may be the more significant move.
That's
in the long term,
too.
That
yep.
if Congress passes a law that kind of restrains the power of the very left-wing city council and actually imposes stricter penalties for crimes, that the D.C. City Council over the years tried to move the criminal justice system to a much more permissive structure, and there was a backlash, and they started going the other direction. But if Congress gets involved and really puts its finger on the scale, that could really make a big difference.
Josh, interesting times. We'll see what happens today. The president's not slowing down. He's having a big tech meeting tonight. His wife, the first lady, is having a how AI should be in schools during the day, and he's got a big call with Zelensky any moment. So we'll find out what the plan against Russia is. Good time to be in our jobs, Josh. Thanks so much for joining us.
Never a dull moment. Thanks, Brian.
Back in a moment.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, I'm Trey Gowdy, host of the Trey Gowdy Podcast. I hope you will join me every Tuesday and Thursday as we navigate life together and hopefully find ourselves a little bit better on the other side.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I know we don't do a lot of European coverage, but we should know that the immigration system has brought down and really caused havoc in so many societies. We see it in France, we see it in Spain, we see it in London, and you don't get enough, but all hell is broken loose because they've let in anyone and everyone with this liberal government over in Ireland. That's why Conor McGregor, the UFC fighter, posted a video on social media outside government buildings calling for people to contact their counselors to ask them to support his presidential bid. Here's Conor McGregor.
Ireland, as a master of martial combat, a solution-driven man, you will hear me speak on a problem but once. Then it is action towards solution. I urge all our citizens to be of the same. Today, Ireland, I am outside these gates of these appointed officials. But as your head of state, you empower me to enter these buildings on your behalf. A president face-to-face with government officials with only one priority. To ensure that the country our founding fathers gave their life for is strictly adhered to on behalf of its citizens. Ireland, under my tenure, the will of the people will be heard. Ireland, under my tenure, we will return important articles of our constitution prior, and thus again aligning with Padraig Pearse's proclamation, in that we declare the right of the people of Ireland to the ownership of Ireland and to the unfettered control of Irish destinies, to be sovereign and indefeasible, Irish men and Irish women, in the name of God.
So Conor McGregor wants to bring back traditional Ireland, and which has gone way to the left. Remember, they were the country that condemned Israel, recognized the Palestinian state, the first to do it. They've actually told their ambassador, Israel has called back their ambassador back to their country, said, I'm not going to even be part of this. A lot of people in Ireland don't even recognize their country. So Conor McGregor is taking action. By the way, quick talk about taking action. September 27th, I talked to Governor Glenn Youngkin. He might be showing up in Richmond, Virginia for us for History, Liberty, and Laughs. It's going to be streamed on Fox Nation. And then, of course, November 1st, we'll be in Pottstown, Pennsylvania. Go to BrianKilmeade.com so you can have patriotic, inspirational, motivational night. And every show is different. BrianKilmeade.com.
Top Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show coming to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. It's exciting time. There's a lot going on. I'm watching RFK Jr. He knows he's going to get it today from maybe both sides, Republican and Democrat, about the changes, not only in the vaccine scheduling, perhaps what he's been doing in terms of gutting a lot of people there, 1,000 signed petitions asking for him to be fired that work at the CDC. But is anyone thrilled with the CDC? I mean, we're fresh off the pandemic. Do you think they handled it well? I don't. Benjamin Anthony's going to be with us this hour, the CEO and co-founder of the Miriam Institute, an organization that specializes in policy-focused briefings on matters relating to Israel. We know Israel, all-out move to get into Gaza City. We'll do a simulcast in Varney and Company, and Mark Thiessen is outside playing pickup basketball, so he wants me to buy a little bit of time. So let's go to the big three.
Number three.
T-A-C-O, Trump always chickens out. You know, I hate to be so blunt, but somebody's got to say the truth. And there are a lot of people like Brandon Johnson, like Pritzker, who are standing up and saying the truth. And what you are seeing is this. You ready for the chicken invitation?
D.A. Larry Krasner, what an embarrassment he is for Philadelphia. He's terrible. And he's pushing back against a crime crackdown. You are an idiot. There's a pause right now in sending National Guardsmen, more ICE operatives, FBI into Chicago, as the White House might be directing an emergency security team to New Orleans instead. I'll explain.
Number two.
Now, what the Surgeon General pointed out today is there are actually some mandates in Florida regulatory that never even made it into statute. Through his agency, long before I was governor, long before he was Surgeon General. So he has the ability to peel those back.
That is Governor Ron DeSantis, MAHA under fire, as RFK will be grilled over the proposed changes and vaccine policy. Florida is now not waiting for any hearing. They have already lifted all their vax mandates. Could this other states be next?
Number one.
Well, I'm having a conversation with him very shortly, and I'll know pretty much what we're going to be doing. We've taken very strong action, as you know, and in other ways we've taken very strong action. But I'll be speaking to him over the next few days, and we're going to see.
Your move, Mr. President. Vladimir Putin is playing with the peace process and not enjoying it. And the one man trying to give him an off-ramp to end a conflict that has destroyed his economy and cost him a million men, he has not taken that off-ramp. Today's call with the Ukrainian president might contain Trump's game plan. And that's where we'll begin. Mark Thiessen is a guy that I hope the president would call to say, Mark, what ideas do you have? Because he's got them and we'll share them. Mark, you off the court?
Yeah, I'm dialing down. I'm ready.
All right, good. So, Mark, what do you think the president's going to say to Zelensky today? What do you hope he says?
You know, well, here's the thing. Donald Trump has done exactly the right thing, which is to try and end this war and to try to give Vladimir Putin the off-ramp that he, quite frankly, should be seizing because he's not doing well. His economy is in shambles. He's spending 4 out of 10 rubles in the federal budget on this war. He's lost a million men. He's almost out of armor. He can't win this war. And he's in the position where Trump can crush his economy by doing to his oil and gas sales what he did to Iranian oil gas sales in his first term. And Trump is giving him a way out, and he's not taking it. Just 2 weeks ago, he met with him in Alaska, and he handed him a letter, a beautiful letter, written by his wife Melania Trump, pleading to Putin to do something not just for Russia but for humanity, to restore the melodious laughter of Ukrainian children. And Putin accepted the letter, and last week he delivered his response. He targeted and bombed a kindergarten in Kyiv, killing 4 children. I don't know how he could be clearer in terms of his response to Melania Trump. It was an insult to the First Lady. It was a slap in the face to Donald Trump, who delivered his wife's letter. And he's been absolutely clear as to he has given over. What he does is he says nice things in person. He says nice things on the phone, and then he bombs a kindergarten. Then he bombs a hospital. Then he bombs these are not military targets. And by the way, now after Trump had all the European leaders in the White House, he bombed the EU leaders. He bombed the EU headquarters in Kyiv, and he hit the British Council, which is a British diplomatic facility. So, I at some point, the answer is what it is. Trump was right to engage him. Just as Ronald Reagan was right to engage Mikhail Gorbachev, the problem is Trump doesn't have Gorbachev. He has Putin. And Gorbachev was willing to deal. Gorbachev wanted peace. Gorbachev wanted to de-escalate. Putin doesn't want any of those things, and he's not going to do this willingly. He's going to have to be coerced. So it's time for the coercion to begin.
And right, and you're absolutely right. I just think that what would it be? $300 billion, unfreeze it and give it to Zelensky. Those are Russian funds. Mostly, I hear, in Belgian banks, so they got to do that. Maybe they don't want to, but they should. How about the secondary sanctions on China, Brazil, and Turkey? Could he actually do that? Could he pull them off the monetary system? Should he do that? Here's what President Trump was dealing with yesterday. I thought this was an interesting response. Cut 28.
I put out a truth last night. You saw that. And I was the one that brought it up. I said, they're only doing this. They're really there looking to when they did what they did. I thought it was a beautiful ceremony. I thought it was very, very impressive. But I understood the reason they were doing it, and they were hoping I was watching, and I was watching. My relationship with all of them is very good. We're going to find out how good it is over the next week or two. I think that we helped China very much, as you know.
In World War II, he said you didn't mention us at all. They're just talking about how they triumphed over Japan. That's an interesting way to triumph over Japan, getting annihilated to the point where they're still bitter to this day. They played a small role, but they didn't give the U.S. anything. It would have been a perfect opportunity to say the U.S. isn't here, but we appreciate their role in World War II. But that didn't happen, did it?
No, it didn't. I mean, look, they had a military parade that looked like an old Cold War military parade, like
12,000
troops. Square. You know, and displaying all of these weapons and everything. And you had literally, you know, people are saying, you know, sort of mock the idea that this is some sort of a new axis of evil. Well, there they were, Putin, Xi, and Kim Jong-un, right, standing next together saying, hi, we're the axis. Hello. You know, I mean, there's no way we're going to separate them from each other. They are allied together. They are the new focus of evil in the world, as Ronald Reagan called the Soviet Empire. And they want to drive the U.S. out of the world. They want to restore. They believe they're ascendant. And Ukraine is the battlefront right now. And if we allowed Putin to succeed in Ukraine, Taiwan would be next, and the world would slip into chaos. Donald Trump's not going to let that happen. I think one of the things I respect most about President Trump, and is that he does what he says. And what he said, you know, he's given Putin every chance. But what he has said is if Ukraine agrees to peace, and Ukraine has done everything Donald Trump has asked since that unfortunate meeting in the Oval Office in February. Since then, the Ukrainians have agreed to immediate unconditional ceasefire, partial ceasefire, meet with Putin in Istanbul, meet with Putin, you know, wherever Trump wants. Ukraine is a flat yes to anything Donald Trump is saying when it comes to peace with Russia, and Putin is a no. And Trump has said if Ukraine agrees to peace and Putin does not, he has said he will side with Ukraine. And he has said that the consequences will be he will bring the hammer down on the Russian economy and he will give Ukraine more weapons than they ever got before. They're going to be paid for by Europe. They're going to be paid for by Ukraine, not by American taxpayers. So anybody who's complaining about that, that's over. But we're going to give. But they need our weapons, and we're going to. And he has also said that he may allow Ukraine to finally use them to hit Russian territory. Because why should Russia be allowed to launch attacks on Kyiv and take out a kindergarten in it, from Russian territory, but their territory should be impermeable. So I think the hammer's about to come down if Putin doesn't wake up.
All right, I want to bring it to Venezuela. What do you think the president's ultimate goal is? You have four destroyers off the coast of Venezuela. They took out one of those swift boats that were heading to Trinidad and eventually to our shores with illegal drugs. He is putting pressure in Central and South America and attention in this region where China is in Ecuador, they're in Argentina, they're in Bolivia, they're in Brazil, and they're all over Venezuela. The president, without making a major announcement, is focusing on our backyard. Remember, his first move was making them sell off their rights to the Panama Canal or we take it back.
Yeah, he's restoring the Monroe Doctrine. I mean, this is we are not going to allow foreign powers to threaten us from our own backyard, and we're not going to let transnational drug cartels poison our children and bring crime into our cities. Trinidad, we're going to round up every single one of their terrorists here in the United States and deport them. And we are going to, and if they try to bring stuff into our country, we're going to take them out. Just the way this is just the way we took out, ISIS and Al-Qaeda with drone strikes. These are terrorists. They're now internationally designated terrorists. And it's restoring deterrence in our hemisphere. And it's sending a message to Mexico, by the way. She's like, you want to be next? Take care of your cartels. Because if you don't do it, we're going to do it.
It would mean a lot if Maduro fell. There's a government waiting that's popular that could step right in. And to not have Iran, Russia, and China in that country would be a boon for our national security, don't you think?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Maduro, and look, no one has been tougher on Maduro than the Trump administration has been. Now we're, you know, literally sending a flotilla off of his coast to stop these drug cartels. And keep in mind that the Maduro regime is not simply just a communist socialist regime. It's a narco-criminal regime. They are completely entwined in this drug trade. It is the regime there that is making billions of dollars sending this fentanyl and all these drugs into the United States. And when you take out that swift boat, that is a strike against the regime, not just against transnational drug cartels.
Here's what the Secretary of State Marco Rubio said yesterday from Mexico City. Cut 13.
The United States has long, for many, many years, established intelligence that allow us to interdict and stop drug boats. And we did that. And it doesn't work. Interdiction doesn't work because these drug cartels, what they do is they know they're going to lose, you know, 2% of their cargo. They bake it into their economics. What will stop them is when you blow them up, when you get rid of them. The President of the United States is going to wage war on narco-terrorist organizations. This one was operating in international waters, headed towards the United States to flood our country with poison. And under President Trump, those days are over.
So I think that message just ripples throughout the next boat captain that wants to get behind that wheel. Does America know we're coming? Are they watching us? We already know they will kill us. Not curtail, not arrest, but kill them. I love the message.
I love the message, too. It sends a ripple through Central and South America, and it sends a ripple through the Middle East, and it sends a ripple through Europe, and it sends a ripple through Asia, because you combine the Operation Midnight Hammer, taking out, obliterating the Iranian nuclear program, now taking military action against the drug cartels in our neighborhood. We no longer have a president who wakes up every morning terrified of escalation. We have a president who is willing to go to the top of the escalation ladder and dare you to follow him. And that is why Donald Trump was the first president since Ronald Reagan not to get us into a new war, because people mm-hmm. know that he is willing to use military force. The fundamental philosophy of Trump's foreign policy is you have to be willing to escalate to de-escalate. And he is willing. No one is willing to follow him up that ladder because they know that he will follow through.
All right, we'll see. So. I think that part of the game plan is going to be revealed to Zelensky today, and I know the president is reluctant to say the minute I do this, U.S.-Russia talks are over, and that's why he's reluctant to do it. Not that he's worried.
Right. He's
he
right.
wants to
he's
find right to a way patient. To save lives and money, and now this is it's going to go the opposite way because Vladimir Putin's a thug. And that's all he'll ever be. Mark Thiessen, thanks so much.
Thank you. Take care.
Okay. 1-866-408-7669. I'm going to ask you, I didn't bring it up yet, but right now RFK is testifying. He's going to be talking about vaccines. Should every family decide whether they want their kids vaccinated or not? How do you feel about that? Are you ready for that? Is there somewhere in between? I want to take your calls next. 1-866-408-7669. And, of course, whatever's on your mind. Don't move.
The fastest growing talk show in America. You're with Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we are back and watching RFK reading his opening statement, and I'm sure he's going to be ready. Smart guy. He's going to be ready for the critics, and he remembers what it was like getting confirmed. But he does need a new CDC commissioner because he fired her. Let's go to Hank in Virginia. Hank, what's on your mind?
Hey, Brian. How you doing, buddy?
Good. What's on your mind?
Two things. I really think they need to go after those submarines that come out of Colombia and Venezuela, those tiny little subs that deliver the narcotics because they're very efficient. I have a team of Navy, whatever, going after them. But the number one thing is it might not just be Putin's decision to end the war. I mean, I'm sure it's a lot on his plate. But I think Chi really likes to have that because it keeps us busy over here. And then, you know, he's doing these all this action down there in the South China Sea. So it might not just be Putin's decision.
Well, I'll tell you what, it wasn't working for President Xi early, China early. We'll see if it works now. I mean, it is diminishing their partnership. They are losing a lot of men and a lot of armament. They have to buy it from North Korea. They were not thrilled with North Korea, but now they're part of the family of nations. But maybe they are benefiting from the Ukraine situation because there's a distraction. But I think with President Trump, should his answer, if you are indeed correct, Hank, his answer should be like, hey, Japan, I'm going to come over there. We're going to talk about how much more money you're putting in defense and offensive weaponry, first time since the 40s. Hey, South Korea, not only you got the THAAD system for missile defense, I think we're going to get you more into the offensive weaponry situation. Philippines, same thing. And Vietnam, man, we're warming relations. And I know you have some complaints about China. Maybe we could start talking to you about that. And then let Taiwan, let them know, Taiwan, now the weaponry is going to flood into Taiwan. So let them know that we could do more than one thing. And a lot of these countries can pay for the weapons I mentioned. We have to expand our base, our industrial base, so we can supply them and allow those checks to flow in. Sandra, real quick in New Jersey. Hey, Sandra.
Good morning, Brian. Brian, I was thinking that this election in New York is so complex and upsetting so many people. I don't understand why we can't have two debates, one with Cuomo and Mandani and one with Curtis Sliwa. Adams, I think, should accept the position from the White House because he even said when his job ends, he wants to do something internationally. So maybe something could be worked out. I think we should have a debate. The people should see.
I know, but you don't want to put your hand on the scale and tell people, no, we're giving you one choice and then we're going to give you another choice. You can't have both. These candidates are candidates. If they have a certain threshold of support, they're on, especially the sitting mayor, who, by the way, says he hasn't been offered that job. Kinda. He didn't have an emphatic denial, but they said there was no job offer. Brian Kilmeade.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we are back, and by the way, this hour we're going to be doing a simulcast with Stuart Varney. You'll get to see what I look like, finally, if you're not watching the stream, and we'll talk about a bunch of stuff. But right now, joining us is Benjamin Anthony, CEO, co-founder of the Miriam Institute, an organization specializing in policy-focused briefings on matters relating to Israel, United States, and the relationship between the two countries. So Benjamin joins us now. Ben, first off, what could you tell us about the last offer that Hamas seems to have accepted, half the hostages back, eight bodies back, exchanged for some prisoners in a ceasefire?
Yeah, well, first of all, Brian, thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you. With regard to your question, I think that it's very important that the listeners understand that Hamas saying that it has accepted this latest offer is not the full picture at all. What's actually the case is that Hamas has established several conditions as part of the deal for them to accept this offer that the state of Israel has never acceded to, has never agreed to. And those include the release of certain terrorists who are held in Israeli prisons, people with blood on their hands. They also include the complete withdrawal of the Israel Defense Forces from inside the Gaza Strip. I remind everybody that the territory that we hold was hard fought and hard won. We have close to 1,000 soldiers who've been killed in the course of this horror since the Hamas massacre of October the 7th. And it also calls for the rebuilding of the Gaza Strip. And I personally do not think that the appropriate response to a massacre such as we saw on October 7th, where 1,200 of our people are murdered and 252 are kidnapped, 20 of them still held alive, a further 30 who are no longer alive in the dungeons of Gaza, that the appropriate response for that is that people get brand new apartment buildings and hotels along the shoreline there in Gaza. I think those demands really need to be rejected. I don't think it's tenable, and I think what ought to happen is that President Trump really should use all of his diplomatic heft and weight and all of his knowledge of deal-making and business and implement his vision. His vision is the correct vision, the relocation of the Gazans outside the Gaza Strip, first and foremost into the Sinai Peninsula, and then I believe throughout the continent of Africa. Two last points about that. I'd like to see the Prime Minister of Israel move more directly on that proposal. I think it's a wonderful proposal, an appropriate proposal. And I also think that Hamas coming back to the table, Brian, of course, is in no small part the result of President Trump demanding in Truth Social that Hamas release all of the hostages, showing that he supports Israel ramping up its military campaign there in Gaza City.
The minute the U.S. looks like they're equivocating, it makes Hamas, emboldens Hamas. It makes everything more difficult. And the thing is, Egypt's not helping. Egypt's built like a fortress on the border. So there's nowhere for the Palestinians who want to go, right? If they wanted to get out, how do they get out?
Yeah, so again, thank you for pointing that out to your listeners. This is something that goes without being spoken about far too often. Look, there are basic conventions of the international community that are long held in the case of a displaced population. First, the international community implores neighboring states to absorb the displaced, and then it applauds them for doing so. We saw that, for example, in the context of the Syrian civil war. We saw it in the context of the Russia-Ukraine war. Only here, with regard to the Gazans, are we told, number one, that anyone who absorbs the displaced Gazans, who are displaced as a consequence of their own leadership and the actions of that leadership, that anyone who absorbs them is guilty of being complicit in ethnic cleansing, which is completely false. And we're also told, Brian, uniquely, that only the Gazans, among all the people on the face of the earth, wish to stay uniquely in the conditions in which they're currently immiserated, again, as a consequence of the actions of Hamas. So this is a complete double standard. And I think the Egyptians should be compelled to answer two questions. The first question is, if the Gazans really do want to stay exactly where they are inside the Gaza Strip, as the Egyptians tell us, just open up your border, Egypt, let them have free entry into the Sinai Peninsula. You surely have nothing to fear because the Gazans will want to stay put. And the second question that the Egyptians have to answer is, if they are so concerned for the well-being of the Gazans, why are they buttressing and bolstering their borders, ready to open fire on any Gazans who walk into the Sinai Peninsula in the case that they do so? It's an obvious double standard, and I'd like to see much more pressure exerted against the Egyptians with a view to them absorbing the Gazans into the Sinai Peninsula.
So, Benjamin, the one thing we did see is hundreds of thousands, I think it was last weekend, marched to say they want a deal, want the Israeli hostages out. They don't want to see an invasion of Gaza. I'm sure the prime minister knows there's some domestic opposition to his moves. The other thing is we got is the UAE came out and said the Abraham Accords, they'll leave the Abraham Accords if Israel annexes any part of the West Bank. First off, on the population being in support of a Gaza invasion, that is a tough call, and it's not unanimous.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's a very tough call, and I'm speaking as a veteran of service in the Israel Defense Forces, including during the course of this war inside the Gaza Strip. I'm familiar with it. My most recent tour of duty concluded in November of last year. I don't know if I'm going to be drafted to this round or subsequent rounds. It's not an easy thing when you're mobilizing a citizen military in order to go and defend the country, as we've been doing since October 7th, 2023. But with that having been said, there's obvious consensus behind the idea that we want all of the hostages home. We do. I think you'll be very hard-pressed to identify anyone in Israel who does not want that outcome to come about. But there's also an oversimplification of a very sinister reality at play. Hamas knows that the retention of some of the hostages is essentially their life insurance policy, the life insurance policy of Hamas itself, of this terror regime. So the idea that they're going to willingly and willfully release these hostages as a result of demonstrations going on in Tel Aviv or Jerusalem, that idea, unfortunately, is deeply flawed. You're going to have to match the desire for the return of the hostages through negotiations with the real ramping up and the credible military threat of a continued military operation, in this case, inside Gaza City. And there's an interesting link between your first question and this question. I'm actually hopeful that the moving and evacuating of the Gazans in Gaza City, about 1 million in number, southward, will further increase the obligation upon Egypt to absorb the displaced Gazans. That's one. And the other thing that I want the listeners to be clear about is there's a lot of talk about the attendant dangers of operating inside Gaza City for the Israel Defense Forces. Those are real dangers, but make no mistake about it, if we do move into Gaza City, we will crush Hamas in that area. We will not be defeated. We will not be destroyed. We will destroy Hamas and its battalions as we've done thus far.
So Hezbollah, who you've done an incredible job to dismantling, they say they were the gold standard of terror groups. They're negotiating hard to continue to survive with the Lebanese government. They're proposing tactics. They want to stay armed, and they want to play a role. That's not going to fly with us or with Israel, right? How close are Hezbollah from yesterday's news in Lebanon?
Well, this is actually an opportune moment to express the difference that's at play when the state of Israel has a fiercely supportive president of the United States sitting in the White House. I well recall the embargo that was implemented by the Biden administration that was actually serving at that time. I remember the atmosphere that pervaded over the area in which I was located. And the terror organization Hamas and also Hezbollah know and understand that in contrast to then, there is a fierce friend of the state of Israel currently in the White House, and that's to be celebrated. It's also to be acknowledged, and it's to be praised, dare I say. With regard to your question about Hezbollah, it's very interesting because it highlights the precise distinction between what can be done in Lebanon and what can be done in Gaza. You can't leave Hamas with their weapons because Hamas are also the government of the Gaza Strip. They're the administrators of the Gaza Strip. Whereas in Lebanon, what you can have is you can have a situation where Hezbollah, the terror organization, is disarmed. Obviously, they don't want to be disarmed, but they may have to accede to that condition anyway. And you can actually have permanent security in Lebanon that is adjudicated by the government of Lebanon under Joseph Aoud and under the Lebanese armed forces, LAF. So I think there's potential there. But of course, no one's going to willingly disarm. All of these characters, Hamas, Hezbollah, and everybody else, including, incidentally, their patron, Iran, it's very important to realize they are negotiating from a position of profound, profound weakness, that weakness having been dealt to them by Israel in consort, for example, during our operation against Iran's nuclear weapons program, with very substantial backing and assistance from this American president.
Yeah, Syria, you probably don't have a hostile government there. At least it doesn't seem to be. Lebanon, potentially, you could have a non-hostile government there. And Iran, I hear that administration, when the word goes out about the snapback sanctions, it could really disrupt their population, hopefully to rise up against their government. But all eyes are on Gaza today. Benjamin Anthony, great talking to you. Thanks so much.
Good to be with you. Thank you for having me.
You got it. We come back, we'll do a simulcast with Stuart Varney, and then we'll have a few minutes at the back end to take some phone calls. Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here.
It's the Will Cain Show. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday on FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss a show. Get the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
Now, the Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney and Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
All right, welcome back. In a matter of moments, we'll do a simulcast with Stuart Varney, who's been in and out of the hearings with RFK Jr., who's defending a lot of the personnel changes, his approach on vaccines, and pointing out how the CDC thoroughly let us down and you down, especially everybody down during the COVID-19 catastrophe, especially the kids in schools. When you talk about the vaccine, could have been great for people with underlying conditions. The mandates divided our country in a way in which we've left total distrust of his agency, of CDC, on down. We'll work on personnel issues there. And now let's listen in.
There he
let's
is.
Go do a sound.
All right, Brian, let's get on with it. The New York Times says President Trump's advisors have discussed a job for New York City Mayor Eric Adams and Curtis Sliwa if they both quit the mayor's race. If they both turn the offer down, and we are told they have turned the offer down, then Mamdani wins, right?
Maybe. I think people, I mean, his numbers haven't budged. It's just that Cuomo, Adams, and Sliwa have not come up much. I mean, he's still got the same constituency there. He's around 40%. But I would say this. We saw those polls last week, Stuart, that said one-on-one, Cuomo beats Mondami. One-on-one, Adams is within 3 points. They did not do the Sliwa analysis. I have Sliwa on Sunday, 10 o'clock on One Nation. I'm going to ask him. He always said, I'm not going anywhere. He doesn't really have a relationship with Trump anyway. And now with Eric Adams, he do have a relationship. He did deny that he was offered anything, but he has not moved much past single digits. As mayor, you know, he is much better than de Blasio, but doesn't seem to know how to hire a staff that can stay out of trouble. That's his issue. So he's running around the country, running around the city, trying to get attention. Cuomo might be somebody that people know, but remember, we just were reminded that Cuomo cost the state between $20 and $40 million defending him in all his legal cases, from the financial cases to the women's allegation cases. Is that the guy you want, the guy that gave us no cash bail, the guy that said criminals run wild?
Let me press this on you, Brian. If Adams and Sliwa, just suppose both of them dropped out, then it's one-on-one with Cuomo. You think Cuomo would beat Mondami?
It looks like it. I mean, certainly really? It's going to be a much closer race. I mean, Cuomo sleptwalked his way through the primary. It's looked like he wasn't in it. Now he seems to have awoken. But when Mondami deserves credit, Mondami won in mind people that use mind, M-I-N-I-E-D, mind people that don't usually pay attention to elections, let alone primaries. They're the younger people, but they're not minorities. These are young people, many of which you see the protests at Columbia, the New School, and NYU, who don't like the country, don't like capitalism. He said he doesn't like capitalism in the financial capital of the country. Do you know he's only got 9% support from the black community? 9%. So he is going to win if he wins with a portion of the population, and most of which are in his cabinet. No experience, no idea what America is about, even though they think they do, because they might have went to a fine institution, and no sense of the good of capitalism. Think about what he's promising. He's promising faster buses and free buses, no idea how to pay for it, freezing rents just to destroy landlords and people that own buildings, and he's going to target billionaires. His supporters are putting up wanted posters of the most successful people in New York as if they're the enemy. So if Cuomo can't beat that, I mean, he's just an embarrassment to his last name, more than he's already been.
I've got to change the subject for a minute here. President Trump today is going to speak on the phone with Ukraine's Zelensky. This comes after Putin cozied up with North Korea's Kim Jong-un and China's Xi Jinping in Beijing. Does Putin want a deal, or is he just dragging this thing out?
He wants all of Ukraine. He's dragging it out. He's got the support of North Korea, literally soldiers. He's got the artillery from North Korea. He was running out initially. And then he's got the backing of China. I mean, these two talk about their relationship. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised one day they're going to be making out when we catch him at the next parade. But this is what the president's got to do. He's got to release the $300 billion that's in the Belgian banks that is Russians, give it to Zelensky. I hope he says those long-range missiles from Germany, from the UK, and the ones, the ATACMs, that we're no longer making because we got onto something better, can now go and target Moscow. He's got to feel pain. He's not a normal person. He can't be rationalized with. He only understands losing. He doesn't care about people. He doesn't care about his economy. He can sustain himself. So what he's got to do is see himself losing on the battlefield. I think that's the only answer, because talking does nothing. His demands are a non-starter. He even backed off his agreement to give security guarantees to Ukraine by allowing international troops to be there. I think Trump understands it. He goes at his pace. I hope his briefing to Zelensky is what Adrian said to Rocky in Rocky III, Rocky II, after coming out of the coma. He said, looked at him and said, win. I think Ukraine's got to give Russia the sense that they will lose.
That was an interesting comparison, Brian.
Thank you.
Oh, good stuff. Well done. Brian Kilmeade, everyone. Moving on.
You got it. I appreciate it. I do think that's the number one story in the country, even though the president's going to have a big meeting tonight with the tech titans, Bill Gates, with Sinchar Pincho of Google, with the CEO of Oracle, with the head of Facebook. And I think it's going to be no Elon Musk, but he's going to be talking about AI. Got it. he's going to be talking about crime. Understand it. But internationally, if he wants to start rebuilding our military base, if he wants to start focusing on the Pacific, he's got to get Europe locked down. He's got to get this war stopped. And I think he's got our allies behind him. I hope, in fact, he does do it. And I think that he understands it. He's not naive that Vladimir Putin is not looking for an off-ramp. He thinks he can win by fighting on. And there's nothing he learned from that parade yesterday with 10,000 Chinese soldiers, 50,000 in attendance, 25 world leaders, that he thinks he's got the wind on his back. And that's what President Trump has got to realize, that Putin doesn't want to stop. And he'll say things to make Trump say, oh, you're the best president ever and so great to deal with you and we could have a world of peace. And, yeah, I'll talk to Zelensky eventually. Well, Trump gets that. He's more experienced than all of us. Listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't forget, Fox Nation will have History, Liberty, and Laughs coming up on the 27th. Attention, Richmond listeners, anyone in the Virginia area, hope to see you in person. Just go to BrianKilmeade.com. Keep it here.
I'm Janice Dean. Join me every Sunday as I focus on stories of hope and people who are truly rays of sunshine in their community and across the world.
Listen and follow now at FoxNewsPodcast.com.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. Welcome to the latest minutes of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. I'm at 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. We're going to be bringing you some of the highlights of the RFK hearing where Democrats and Republicans, much very disappointed in Senator Cassidy. He's a doctor, and you would think that he'd let RFK answer questions. Why are you making speeches? Why are you throwing up graphs and facts? And he says it's not true. And then we sit there and go, well, who's telling the truth? Why don't you let him answer? I don't get it. You know, there's certain times that people go in front of you and you just want to make speeches, maybe 1 in 100 if I was a lawmaker, but not every single one of these people just yelling at RFK Jr. I want to hear his answers. Ken Isaac's going to be with us today, author of a book, Running with Fire, helping in Jesus' name. He's a vice president of programming and government relations at Samaritan's Purse. So we're going to talk about all the calamities happening right now, the emergency in Gaza, whether you like it or not, the things got to get solved there, whether it's an invasion that results in the end of Hamas or some type of ceasefire. Syria is still only governed in a small fraction of the country by their government, and Ukraine, thanks to Russia. We'll discuss all those things with Ken. Lieutenant Colonel Scott Mann, we're going to talk about what's happening with September 11th and looking at 24 years now, what the president's doing. And what we're doing, should we be a Secretary of War instead of Defense? So before we take your calls, by the way, which we will sprinkle in, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
DACO, Trump always chickens out. You know, I hate to be so blunt, but somebody's got to say the truth. And there are a lot of people like Brandon Johnson, like Pritzker, who are standing up and saying the truth. And what you are seeing is this. You ready for the chicken invitation? Look, look.
Larry Krasner, the DA in Philadelphia, should be embarrassed. Instead, he's on CNN going after Trump for trying to crack down on crime. That 68% of Democrats says is serious is a problem, and 90%, 95% of Republicans. He wants to crack down on crime in Chicago. And by the way, Philadelphia could use the help, too. And because he's hesitating because of a court case decision, Larry Krasner thinks he's chicken. What an idiot.
Number two.
Now, what the Surgeon General pointed out today is there are actually some mandates in Florida regulatory that never even made it into statute through his agency long before I was governor, long before he was Surgeon General. So he has the ability to peel those back.
There you go. Governor Ron DeSantis is putting the decision with the parents on if their kids should be vaccinated or not. RFK is fighting for this right now. You know, I'm going to give you some of the back and forth shortly.
Number one.
Well, I'm having a conversation with him very shortly, and I'll know pretty much what we're going to be doing. We've taken very strong action, as you know, and in other ways we've taken very strong action. But I'll be speaking to him over the next few days, and we're going to see.
There you go, President Trump. Your move, Mr. President. Vladimir Putin is playing with the peace process. He's not taking part in it. And the one man trying to give him an off-ramp is you. And he does not want it. It destroyed his economy. He has a million casualties. He doesn't care. We have to take action. His conversation with Zelensky, I hope, will reveal the game plan. And that's a little bit where we'll begin. But I want to take a step back and talk a little bit about the hearing happening right now. Mark Warner's talking. Of course, doesn't let RFK answer. Just going off on him. He didn't vote for him to begin with. It's not a surprise. Was disappointed in Cassidy. We have a section of the interplay with RFK defending his change in personnel, cut back in certain programs, and differing stance when it comes to vaccines. Listen.
If your panel recommends changing the vaccine schedule for children, do you anticipate that fewer children will receive these common vaccinations, yes or no?
What I would say, Senator...
The obvious answer is yes. Should parents and schools of Colorado be prepared for more measles outbreaks as a result of that, Mr. Secretary?
Senator,
how about more mumps outbreaks?
I do not anticipate a change in the MMR vaccine. ACIP is an independent panel. So,
it's a panel you just put those folks on. Far from what you said, they're people with ideas that are completely outside the mainstream.
You mean out of the pharmaceutical paradigm?
So that's what he's trying to say is the other people on that panel that were evaluating drugs and vaccines were all part of the pharmaceutical industry. And he says these people aren't. One of the comebacks I heard from Senator Cassidy was, you said those people are independent, but they've testified against pharmaceutical companies. He goes, yeah. Oh, I know their point of view. Their point of view is they haven't sold out the pharmaceutical companies. And if they have that opinion, they might be used as expert witnesses as long as they let their bias be known. But of course, even Senator Cassidy doesn't let him be heard. So we'll see what happens about this. I think there are personnel, they're empty posts that need to be filled. A lot of that has to do with the fact that the Senate will not confirm anybody, but I think RFK has got to go in there and defend himself. And look, a lot of the stuff is over my head. Unless you're a doctor on any level, we're not experts, we're not in medical research, but letting go of all vaccines I think is a mistake, but not saying vaccines have worked ever is a mistake. Saying that every one of them is necessary is also a mistake. So there might be a chance if they had a legitimate hearing and not theater to get stuff done. But Governor Ron DeSantis, again, leading the charge. He said, look, I am not for having everyone mandated to take these vaccines. We're going to hear a lot about autism and what they found shortly the cause of. It's out of control in this country. We don't know why. Everyone is so emphatic. It's not vaccines. It's not vaccines. Look, I don't have anybody directly that in my family with vaccines or an issue. But what RFK says, everything is on the table. And we do get a lot of vaccines. A lot of people say we should not be getting them all at once. I talked to Dr. Nicole Sapphire about that. She's pro-vaccine, but thinks the blizzard of vaccines, some of which we don't need after a certain age, should be cut back. But this is dramatically different. Listen to Ron DeSantis, cut 33.
And as a parent, you shouldn't be penalized. Right now in this country, you go in for a surgery, some places won't see you if you haven't had the COVID shot or certain immunizations. Some pediatricians discriminate based on whether you've done hepatitis B or not. And that's not informed consent. When there are coercive impacts, when they're trying to coerce choices and there's negative impacts, then that undermines your ability to choose. So I think it's typical. Everything we did during COVID, they screamed bloody murder on all of it. The reality is we've always been for informed consent and we've always been for parental rights.
And that's what the governor is saying what they're going to do in Florida. Get your vaccine if you want. Now, does that put everybody else's health in jeopardy? I mean, that's what they were telling us. Remember, if everybody doesn't get a vaccine, we're all going to die. And the people that didn't were kicked out of school, kicked out of the military, kicked out of their job, not allowed to travel, couldn't get on an airplane. People are still angry. I'm still angry at that. You know, people are, you know, if I have two of my daughters playing college soccer, they couldn't play unless they got a vaccine. Three sets of vaccines later, they were able to get on the field. Do I know what type of long-term impact that was? But do you really want your kids to get kicked out of school 2 or 3 years in? Most of you said no, just take the vaccine. Well, some of you suffered some ramifications with that. And President Trump came out last week and said, I think he put it on Truth Social. Look, I think Warp Speed was a great accomplishment, maybe his greatest. But he wants to know the results of people that had negative effects to the vaccine. We know the people that are saved. Now tell me how many heart conditions. Tell me how many people still are suffering from chronic fatigue because of it. Give me that study. What are you afraid of? And the president's asking for the results, negative results that may or may not, that I know exist, of a vaccine that he pioneered and pushed forward. And I think one of the things that RFK was saying, when he can get a word in, was for COVID-19, the vaccine was right on the money. But as the virus evolved, they didn't respond to it, but they kept requiring it. And people are never going to forget that, ever. Here's more from DeSantis, cut 32.
We believe in informed consent, and we believe in parental rights. Those have been core principles that we've operated on both during COVID and after COVID. Now, what the Surgeon General pointed out today is there are actually some mandates in Florida regulatory that never even made it into statute through his agency long before I was governor, long before he was Surgeon General. So he has the ability to peel those back. He also has the ability, which he's doing, to expand the religious objection to include moral and ethical concerns about it. And so we feel that's empowering people to make the right decisions for themselves and for their families.
So that's why Ron DeSantis leading the charge again. Remember, he was invaluable during the COVID-19 event. He would be on the phone doing his looking at his sources, talking to his experts. And he opened up that state right away. And I know it because I was able to go down there and broadcast from Florida. So I want to give you some more of the back and forth here. Republican Senator Bill Cassidy, a doctor that was reluctant to green light RFK. And he was determined today just to make speeches. Let's listen. Oh, this is Senator Warner, guy who voted against him, vehemently against him, too. Let's listen.
You're the Secretary of Health and Human Services. You don't have any idea how many Americans died from COVID?
I don't think anybody knows that because there was so much data chaos coming out of the CDC, and there were so many perverse incentives.
You don't know the answer of how many Americans died from COVID. This is the Secretary of Health and Human Services. Do you think the vaccine did anything to prevent additional deaths?
Again, I would like to see the data and talk about the data.
You've had this job for 8 months, and you don't know the data about whether the vaccine saved
and
lives?
That's the problem, is that they didn't have the data. The data by the Biden administration, absolutely dismal.
Who is politicizing? You're saying the Biden administration politicized all the data? Go back to what Senator Cantwell just said.
Go to
the Trump Surgeon General.
They fired Dr. Grout. They fired all the people who questioned the orthodoxy. They fired Dr. Gruber, Dr. Kaus.
So, Mr. Chairman, the Secretary of Health and Human Services doesn't know matter how many Americans died from COVID.
So he nailed him to the cross there, but he's going to keep on pioneering through. Yes. The Bidens were terrible in every way, shape, or form. I will never forgive them. And that's what the RFK is saying. What they should be focusing on is the other vaccines, where he stands on them, and give me the data that shows that we should not be taking mumps and measles and all the other things that have been standard really since the 40s. I'd love to know the school of thought of that. That's without a point of view. That's a question. Just tell me the answer. If you're not a medical researcher or a doctor, you don't know. We have a guest coming up. I want to give Ken Isaac some time, and we'll do that and bring back more of the Q&A with RFK.
You're with Brian Kilmeade.
This is Jason Chaffetz from the Jason in the House podcast. Join me every Monday to dive deeper into the latest political headlines and chat with remarkable guests.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com
or wherever you download podcasts.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, we're back. Ken Isaacs here. We first met in Washington. I was explaining some of my history books, and Ken gave us not only a look at history, but what he's doing on a daily basis, which is just enormously good things for people in desperate need. And that's what Good Samaritan's Samaritan's Purse is. He's the author of a brand new book, Running to the Fire, Helping in Jesus' Name. Ken Isaacs, Vice President of Programming and Government Relations for that great organization. Congratulations on the book.
Thank you. It's a work achieved.
So you're not reading, you're not talking about somebody else running. You're doing it. You're running to help people.
Yeah, it's true. It's a memoir of things that I've encountered in the last 35 years.
What have you done?
Oh, my gosh. I've been in, you know, 150 countries. I've worked in probably 100 countries. I've been in 18, 19 war zones, 4 genocides, famines, Ebola, set a hospital up here in Central Park in the Meadows. The Lord has been good, and I've had an opportunity to do a lot of things.
And you just back from Gaza. What did you see?
Well, I saw in Gaza, you know, it's a tough situation all the way around. Israel has sworn that they're going to destroy Hamas. They've not been able to reach a deal about the release of the hostages and the bodies, so they're getting prepared right now to escalate the offensive up in Gaza City. And then the Gazan people, you know, there's a famine declared. There's a lot of questions around, was that bar lowered to declare that famine? And but there's clearly desperation among the people. There's hunger. I don't feel there's a famine. I didn't see evidence of starvation in the time that I was in Gaza. But everybody's got opinions, and the Palestinian people are caught in the middle.
You you know what evil is, and it's Hamas, what they did on October 7th.
There's no question.
And you also saw goodness, because a lot of those Palestinian people you say are great people.
Yeah, they are. They're very sweet, very good-natured people. But I also, you know, right after October the 7th, 2023, I was there. I was in the kibbutzes. I saw what Hamas did, and it was absolutely, it was horrifying what they did. And it was unprovoked. It was a war. And, you know, it's a bad idea to poke a bear with a stick.
If you, in the Bible, people say good, you know, good people who have achieved what you've achieved, it's you turn the other cheek when things like that happen October 7th. Why don't you just understand your enemy? Is that something that would be true to the Bible if you did that?
I think that if somebody attacked me the way Hamas attacked Israel, there's no way I'd turn the other cheek. You would have to end that. I mean, it comes down to a question, how do you live next to a neighbor that wants to kill you?
And you've seen this up close.
Yes. Yeah, I've seen it up close.
Right. And what do people have wrong about the region?
Well, I think that the primary issue is that the Hamas and the Palestinian officials don't recognize the right of Israel to exist. And they've taught that to their children for decades. And if you see the maps on the walls, there is no Israel. There's just Palestine. And
People should realize that when they talk about a two-state solution, both want one state. Now, even though they were open to two. But when you talk about running to the fire, it's not just about Gaza. You've done it your whole life. How do you be able to get over what you see? You see the most devastating places in the world in desperate need almost every day.
Yeah. Well, you know, I feel like that I've been naturally equipped some way or another, really by God, to be able to absorb those things. I've used the analogy of a screen door. You can see through the screen door and the little bugs and the mosquitoes on your other side, but they can't get into you. Some way or another in my psyche, I'm able to see those things and develop. There were years that I had, you know, PTSD. I didn't know what that was until I came up here at 9/11. And I realized that some of the things that I had been dealing with were a result of not dealing with the things that I'd been exposed to.
By reading your book, could we get some of that into our DNA? For people that have trouble dealing with stressful situations?
I think that there is some good insight into it. That's not the main focus of the book. But I think that in sharing of the stories that I've been through and what I've been exposed to, and then how, you know, it affected my family, how it affected me, I think there's insight in it for people.
Have you always been religious?
I became a Christian when I was 12 years old.
And what has it done for you?
Well, I believe that Jesus Christ is my Savior, and I'm told to help people in the ditches of life and to go do likewise, and that's what I do. I want to have mercy on people. I want to help people in the ditches, and that's why I get to go all over the world and to these kind of places.
Some people go to church on Sunday and go to a soup kitchen on Thanksgiving.
Yes.
You decided to do something much bigger.
I felt called to the world, Brian, and I didn't know what that meant. I had gone to Africa in 1985 for a month, and I came home, a small-town guy. My wife, my kids, small town, Western North Carolina, and I told my wife I felt called to the world, and she said, "Are you losing your mind?" And I prayed about it for close to 2 years, and then a door opened, and I got a call from Franklin Graham, asking for advice from a drilling program, and that ended up my family and I moved to Ethiopia for 3 years, and that's really where it all opened up.
And now you're an executive with that organization working every day.
That's true, and I was also the director of the Office of Foreign Disaster Assistance with the U.S. government, so I've learned a lot, experienced a lot, and been blessed a lot.
Pick up his book. It tells the story of a remarkable career that's not close to done, running to the fire, helping in Jesus' name. Ken Isaacs, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
Great to see you again.
Good to see you, sir.
All right, we come back, Lieutenant Colonel Scott Mann. Don't move.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. We're watching everything going on now with RFK Jr. defending what he's done with his staff, defending what he does with vaccines, pushing back on COVID-19. I think he's extremely well prepared if they give him a chance to answer. I just saw it with Senator Hassan. Why did you stop this? Why did you stop that? He goes, well, these are studies that you're citing. They're done by pharmaceutical companies, and they could not back. I could not back up their data. Well, where's your data? Well, data on what? On a vaccine that they study and they put forward and we buy without looking at our own information? He's only been doing the job for 8 months. General Ryan Johnson was one of the people alone in the minority, sadly, who was unable to push back effectively, even though he was pushing for ivermectin, a lot of the therapies during COVID-19, and he is firmly in RFK's court on this. Coming up on 24 years since 9/11 attacks dramatically changed this country, especially of my next guest, Lieutenant Colonel Scott Mann, conducted and coordinated Task Force Pineapple after he was done trying to save as many people as possible after Joe Biden foolishly pulled out without any preparation, author of Nobody is Coming to Save You, A Green Beret's Guide, and he's also here for many reasons. But, Colonel, welcome back.
Hey, what's going on, Brian?
Hey, first off, how do you feel about Secretary the Defense Department being the War Department?
I like it. I like it. I think, you know, getting on a war footing, you know, and thinking about, you know, because it's kind of going back to our roots, isn't it? You know, it's going back to our roots. And I think what Secretary Hegseth is doing to just reset everything on a war footing and being prepared, you know, for the unthinkable and peace, truth, strength, that kind of thing. I like it. I think it's probably the right move.
Colonel, I'm sure you also know, Scott, what's going on in Venezuela. Four destroyers off the coast, taking out that swift boat leaving the coast. Also interdicting a ship coming from China with the precursors to all these horrific drugs. This is the military very much involved. This is not the Just Say No campaign of the 80s. How do you feel about it?
I think it's overdue, because when you look at just fentanyl alone and the impact that it has on our society and the number of deaths that could be attributed to that, and you look at where it's coming from, look at the origins of it. I've been talking for a while, as have others in the special ops community, about this nexus between international gangs, between, you know, state actors who are really, you know, positioning against us, and violent extremism. You know, what happens if, you know, you get the Star Wars bar and those folks start working together? And I think you're seeing that. I think we've been seeing that for a while, and I think we're up against it. I think you're dealing with some stuff here that is a formidable force. You know, you start downing swift boats and go fast boats, and you start taking on the cartels, that is a Herculean effort. And so I think it's overdue, but I think what we need to be ready for is they're not just going to roll their eyes and take it. You know, this is a formidable threat, and we need to be prepared for them bringing the fight back to us at a local level. That's what's on my mind, is how will this manifest at home as retribution? And we need to be prepared for what that brings.
And you've told me too, you worry about the people, the millions who came across our border over the last 4 years, many of which want to cause us harm. Where did they go? What are they up to? I mean,
yes.
They're not necessarily knocking over 7-Elevens. You worry about a plot and plan.
I do. I think that, you know, look, we're dealing with it. When you talk about Al-Qaeda, when you talk about ISIS-K, you know, these are organizations that have multi-decade narratives. They're very patient. They do not believe in a coexistence with the West. And that ideology is still there. Those groups are still there. I get really worried about these groups, Brian, when they're quiet. I'm not as worried about them when you're kind of seeing them and, you know, because it's kind of like any enemy, you know where they are. But when they're quiet, we should be very concerned, in my assessment, in a pre-9/11 kind of way. What has manifested with the border over the last 4 years? And by the way, you know, a lot of the evacuation that happened, there were people that were thrown on planes that were not vetted, that we did not know who they were. And by we, I mean, as a nation, we brought people over here probably through the airlift that were not well-intentioned. Plus, finally, is in Afghanistan, Minister Haqqani is the former, you know, the king of suicide bombers, has been the Minister of Interior. So he controls the passport office. So you've had people coming into the United States under the Biden administration for sure, legally, that were bad actors as well. So there's going to be a reckoning in the United States, in my assessment. It's just a matter of when.
Colonel, 11 days, the story of Operation Pineapple, a new one-man, one-act play written and performed by you, adapted from the New York Times bestselling book Operation Pineapple Express. First performance December 17th, 18th, 19th, and 20th at 7 o'clock, December 20th at the HCC Performing Arts Center in
Ybor City in Tampa.
Ybor City over in Florida, right?
Yeah, in Tampa.
Mm-hmm. In Tampa. Yep. So that's interesting. Again, you got this theatrical gene in you that was suppressed under camouflage for years, but you're able to take what you did in war and what you did after serving, which arguably is as important, and bring it to the stage. Why is that important?
Well, because if you stop and think, well, first of all, I appreciate you bringing it up. You and I have had this conversation a lot over the years with my first play, Last Out, that was about the war. This play's about the withdrawal. And what I found, Brian, in my recovery is I almost took my own life, man. I had a really bad transition from the military, and storytelling actually was the modality that I found through mentorship to make sense of stuff that didn't make sense, like trauma and grief and moral injury. And it saved me. And since that time, my wife and I and others have been using storytelling as a way to educate Americans on the impact of modern war and what comes with war. When you go to war for 20 years and you use less than 1% of your population to fight it over and over again, there's a cost. Like, what does that look like? And then when you leave a war the way we did and you abandon your 20-year ally, what's the impact on all these veterans who now are on the world's longest 911 call, and you watch the suicide rate go through the roof? You know, the best way to address that, Brian, I believe, yes, there's books and yes, there's movies, but is theater, live storytelling, particularly if it's the persons who lived it telling the story. So I just felt really strong that Pineapple Express is a story that had not been heard. It's a story that a lot of groups did something similar, and I wanted to tell it from the stage so that people couldn't get away from it. And it's what we're going to do, and I think it's going to have a really big impact.
Gary Sinise help in this, right? Or was it just the last one?
Gary helped with the last one. He produced it. I suspect he'll have a role in this one. We're already talking. He's been a big mentor on this. You know, I've got several supporters at that level that will help. I didn't start acting until I was 50, you know, and I started studying acting as a way to deliver stories to help make sense of things that didn't make sense. And I think people in the audience like it because, you know, in addition to telling the story, I lived it. And so I can be as authentic as I need to be in that. I think veterans can tell their own story. So what I'm hoping through this, Brian, is people come to the show like yourself and others, is you hear a story that hasn't been told, and veterans are sitting out there going, that was my life, man. That was my life. I went through that, and you feel seen and heard. And that's what's, I think, killing our veterans and first responders today, is that a lot of them think that what they did didn't matter because we just turned the page on it when we left Afghanistan, and we turned the page on them, and we can't do that, man. They gave us too much.
I hear you. So you go out to what's the best way to get tickets to 11 Days, the story of Operation Pineapple Express?
Go to TF, Tango Foxtrot, tfpineapple.org. We've already got the landing page up there. Come see the world premiere. And then, Brian, we're going to take it on the road in 26. We're going to tour. Okay. I want to get it up to New York City. I want to get it to DC. And I definitely want to get you and CJ to the show and your family. I'd love for you to see it. And we're going to take it to America.
And C.J. Douglas, by the way, is briefing. He's one of the people briefing Secretary of Defense Hegseth today on what went wrong in Afghanistan. Something came out last week I want to discuss with you, and it is that there was an offer given from the Taliban to not take Kabul before. And we thought there was a phone call you could take. We just want the airport. But there was another offer. They did not want it. They did not want to take control of the country yet. They were right. They're a terror organization. What do they know about running the other stuff, too? The whatever they had, buses or pedicabs, who knows? And it was rejected by McKenzie, the general Chernyshev, everybody.
Millie,
what do you think about that?
A lot's coming out now on, you know, the deals that were made. And, you know, I can tell you that a lot of the decisions, including senior military officers that were made in the lead up to the withdrawal, were very, very irresponsible decisions. It was a complete walk away. And, you know, if we've learned anything, I mean, just look at Vietnam. Like, you cannot leave that way. When you leave that way, you leave a gaping hole in a 20-year build of capacity. Here's what I think about it, Brian. We went into Afghanistan because of 9/11, because we did not have appropriate ground intelligence assets, and we did not have a partner force to deal with Al-Qaeda, who launched the worst terror attack in our nation's history. We said never again. We sent our nation's youth in there for 20 years to build that intel capacity, which they did, and to build a partner force, which they did. And then we walked away from it in less than 24 hours, and we kicked that anthill over, and we left all of those veterans and military families and Gold Star families. We basically thumbed our nose at them and said, whatever you guys built over the last 20 years was not even worth trying to hold on to Kabul so we do a responsible handover and keep capacity in place. It wasn't even worth that.
They wanted to share power. Believe it or not, that's what they agreed on in Doha when Trump was in. And then they ended up with the whole thing because Karzai left. We don't even look for Karzai. Where is he? Where's the chopper? Where's the money?
Ghani left. Yeah, Ghani.
Ghani, excuse me.
Yeah. No, it's fine. And it was. And more of this is going to come out. You know, more of this is going to come out. And I hope it does, because we need accountability and we need to learn from this. Because if we don't learn from it, then these moral injuries, this violation of what we know to be right, that's been heaped upon a whole generation of veterans. Mm-hmm. It's now our kids that are going to go back over there and have to unscrew that crap when the next terror attack hits. And you mark my words, everybody will forget, right, the everything that's happened, and we'll load our kids up on planes and we'll go do it all over again and make the same mistakes.
And Scott, here's the one thing that and again, you fight the wars, I report on them, but the one thing that any leader could have explained, that we're in Afghanistan for this reason, to give us a looking glass on the enemies of the world. We were able to see China, able to see Pakistan, able to see what Iran was up to, build alliances out there. If you explain that to the American people, along with our NATO staff, and we held that somewhat together, and maybe there was a chance for more and more kids to be educated and understand that there's, in 20 years, they were beginning to understand there's more than the rubble they're living in. Every day that we were there was an advantage for American security. That was never explained, not by Trump, you know, not by Biden. Right. Bush thought it was definitely relevant to be there, but that's what happened. No one explained it, so they just said, why don't we pull out?
Right. And this is why I always appreciate what you do, is you go to the issue and you don't necessarily go to the party, because this is an area where I do not agree with what the Trump administration has done here, in the sense that, because as you said, had we just explained it, I mean, I don't believe in a complete withdrawal from a country that is the bastion for safe haven. Like, you to think that you can just pull out of a place like that and then deal with the Taliban as a responsible counterterrorism partner, which, by the way, that is what this administration is doing. Make no mistake, we are dealing with the Taliban as a counterterrorism partner. And that's what we're doing, because there is no other partner in the mix. And we're taking their reports and their insights. Sebastian Gorka has even said it, that they're a surprisingly decent counterterrorism partner. I think that's diluted. I think it's a massive mistake.
It's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
It just makes no sense.
And they just lost 800 people in a devastating earthquake. They have no relations with anyone. If that had happened when we were there, we would have saved countless lives.
100%. And we would have had a disposition to influence things in the Southwest Asia part that we don't right now. We're never going to have the ability to fight unilaterally in this world we live in. It's just not possible. We're going to have to work by with and through. And Afghanistan is part of that equation.
And NATO didn't have to be convinced. They were there. They were not looking to pull out. And my last thing I'd say, there would have been no Ukraine invasion, I believe, if Russia didn't deem us as pulling out of the world and weak. They wouldn't have been invaded. See how things ripple together. I just think you need deep thinkers or at least strategic planners before you do something, not somebody doing things for political expediency, especially when the people that fight the war get no say in how it ends, and you won every single battle you were in, and you're not giving credit for it. Lieutenant Colonel Scott Mann, check it out, his one-man play, 11 Days, the story of Operation Pineapple Express, a new one-act, one-man play off his best-selling book, Operation Pineapple Express. Find out more. Where do we go?
TFPineapple.org, Brian. TFPineapple.org.
Colonel Scott Mann, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian. Appreciate you.
Back in a moment.
This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
Is Taylor Swift invited to play the Super Bowl this year, the halftime show?
We would always love to have Taylor play. She is a special talent, and obviously she would be welcome at any time.
Is it in the works?
I can't tell you anything about that.
Is it a maybe?
It's a maybe.
Okay.
Okay.
We'll take a maybe.
It's a maybe.
Okay.
At what point can we expect a decision to be announced?
I'm waiting on my friend Jay-Z to be able to help me with that one. It's in his hands. I'm waiting for the smoke to come out.
He better. I am so tired of these rap groups. I have no idea what's happening. I've been a bunch of Super Bowls. Nobody, 90% of these people don't even know what's going on. Last year, all we heard about is some rivalry that nobody cared about. And it's not entertaining. It's flamboyant productions. I just want someone. I remember the best. Paul McCartney was unbelievable. Can we just have a musician come out and sing?
Or
I don't.
A performer.
Need this the high wire act and.
Well, I thought the year Bruno Mars did it was phenomenal.
Were you there for that?
I was not there. I was only there the Rihanna year.
Perfect blend for everybody.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, but you need the performer that's like catchy songs and also wants to put on a bit of a show, but not like just the super popular person out that the majority of America doesn't know.
And you know what? I can't picture people going, Taylor Swift, I'm going to get a beer. Almost
you know,
everybody
everyone would watch. 100%.
And why wouldn't she do it?
I know.
I mean, it's not like she doesn't even know football. She loves
the
culture.
She loves football now. It's true. The tricky part, right, with that, I mean, who knows where every team's going to end up, but would that be a distraction for the Chiefs if they made it back to the Super Bowl?
Yes.
Yeah.
But she's a distraction for the Chiefs.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, just the fact that she's going is a distraction.
Yeah. Which they now should be used engaged. To by now. Yeah.
Do we have the soundbite when they're talking about being engaged?
We do. Let's hear it.
It's been really fun telling everybody who I'm going to be spending the rest of my life with. So,
well, how has the last week been?
Exciting. Yeah. It's been awesome. Yeah.
Isn't it? There's something different about calling somebody your fiance. Something more, way more official to it.
Yeah, 100%. I felt that at the game, actually. It was my first time introducing Taylor as my fiance to a few of my teammates.
There we go.
So, yeah, it was pretty cool.
Don't you get giddy saying it?
I did. Yeah, I still get giddy.
I love it.
It's exciting times. Still fresh.
That's cute.
That's Travis.
Yes, and Jason.
Jason talking on their very popular podcast. Mm-hmm. So, I was surprised there wasn't more pressure. Like, what's the problem? It's been 3 years or something. But
I mean, I think it all worked out in due time. Did you get giddy when you got to call Dawn, your fiance?
After 10 short years of dating?
Then.
It was definitely different, I'll tell you that. See you later.